Happy New Year and welcome back to the Careering into Motherhood podcast. I'm Jane Johnston and my guest today is Catherine Sansom. Cathy is a qualified counsellor. She works with young people and couples. She's also a trained coach and she works with us at Careering into Motherhood. I invited Cathy on the podcast today because I am sure lots of us have spent a lot of time with our families and loved ones. Hopefully, most of the time it's been fun, but I wanted to get her thoughts on how we can have better relationships and times when stresses and strains might be manifesting themselves. So I'm really pleased to welcome Catherine Sansom. Cathy, I'm delighted to have you on the podcast today. Thank you very much. I'm really looking forward to talking to you and unpicking some of these challenges we all experience at various points in relationships.
Thank you, Jane. Good to be talking with you again.
I mean, a bit of a background as to you. You haven't always practiced as a relationship counsellor, have you?
No, I haven't. In fact, I've had a long career, started in the oil industry and manufacturing. I'm an accountant and did my MBA. I've worked in banking and insurance most of my career and actually still do some consulting in banking and insurance. I went into counselling, it would be about 12 years ago now. I'd experienced some counselling of my own and just thought it was so transformative. I really wanted to learn those techniques.
And just for the purposes of our audience and listeners, what's the difference between coaching and counselling?
Coaching tends to be much more focused on the end result. So we start every session with a topic and a goal for that session. So it is very focused, very much about getting solutions and change. Counseling can be, you could call it a little bit softer. I'm a humanistic counselor, which means I really work at the pace and with whatever that client is bringing me. Now, the two do come together, actually, and I can explain that a little bit as we get into it.
Yes, it's worth saying, obviously, that you are a qualified coach as well as a counsellor. So you're able to bring both of those disciplines together. And then more recently, you qualified as a relationship counsellor working with couples, individuals and children. That must be fascinating. What was it that drew you to that additional focus and specialism?
Yeah, I've always been interested in how couples and partners work together. I've worked in industry and there are relationships there between an employee and manager. But in couples counselling, therapy, coaching, it really is a chance to make the most of that relationship. I think I'm driven by wanting to help people maximise in whatever they're doing, in fact. So that's a great motivator for me.
I can imagine. So we are going out in the new year when people will have spent probably quite a lot of time, perhaps more time than normal, in close confines with family members or friends. And while the picture postcard will tell us that Christmas is supposed to be a joyous time, for some it isn't, and it certainly puts a spotlight or a strain on relationships. So what we were going to talk about today is your top tips for more harmonious relationships.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. January can be a really difficult month where a lot of people look out for coaching or counselling for the first time because it's been a difficult time. You're thrown together often with other relatives as well, and it can highlight differences. What I've put together actually is just a little acronym to help people maybe remember these, and I've structured it around the acronym HEART. That gives us our five.
Very nice. Very nice. So what's the H?
The H is for hearing, and by that I mean really, really hearing, not just listening, but it's real active listening. How I work with my couples, it's listening in a way they may have not listened before. It can be very difficult because often the person who is listening of the two can become quite defensive. And what that does, unfortunately, is kind of shut down the conversation prematurely. Hearing is sitting almost as if, and it sounds a little bit odd, but almost as if you're a journalist. You're really, really curious about what the other person is saying, but you're not emotionally invested in it. You're trying to find things out. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I suppose it is natural, isn't it, when somebody is upset about something and they're talking about that, and that thing that they are upset about is you, your point about becoming defensive. How does one stop oneself from taking it personally, but as you say, hearing that person's gripe?
Yes, and it comes through practicing it, and it won't always be successful, but not giving up. And actually, for those of your listeners who maybe have not had such sessions with a coach or counsellor, that's the value actually of having that third person in the room, because they can stop the conversation and say, oh, you know, just focus on what you did there. You know, let's try that again. Let's replay that. And that practice and having somebody objectively observe can be really useful. If you're doing it yourself, though, a couple of tips around that are to stop occasionally and summarize or paraphrase what the other person said, because it shows that you were really listening, and ask curious, genuinely authentic, curious questions. Have you ever felt like that before, etc.? Have you got any thoughts or solutions for this? Hearing is my first one.
It may be covered in your subsequent letters, but when you've heard that person obviously wants some change. They want things to not just continue. So at the end of the conversation, if you're not just then going to kind of close the book and walk, that was a nice conversation, off I go and carry on with the same behaviour. So where do you take it after that conversation?
Yes, I'll be taking that up in A.
Okay, all right, brilliant. Let's go on to E first then.
Yeah. And E is that real empathy. Empathy often gets confused with sympathy. Everybody likes somebody to feel that they care, but empathy takes it that step further. And it's about really trying to get in the feelings of the other person, to live it with them, in effect. And this can only happen if the hearing starts first and you let the conversation run. What happens often in relationships, and this is, I think, what I'd call the hard work of a relationship. After the early days of a relationship, where you could call it the honeymoon period, the bonding period, where we almost feel like we're one person, it can be wonderful. The natural progression is for that relationship to start to what they call as differentiate, that you remember your separate people as well, and you start to regain a little bit of the individual that might have been a bit subsumed into the relationship. Now, that is a very, very important stage of a relationship, and usually happens about 2 years in. It can be sort of postponed almost indefinitely, depending on the behavior of the two in the couple. But this is where the empathy comes in, because if you shut down a conversation too quickly, and it might be for good reason, it might be somebody is very quick to jump to sorry. And that sounds like a great thing, doesn't it? Now, somebody's willing to apologize and conversation's over. But actually staying in the conversation longer will actually give you better results over the long term.
It makes such sense. But again, I think it's almost this defensive thing, isn't it? When you either get defensive and say, oh, no, that wasn't me, or it's a defensive mechanism to just quickly apologise.
Yes, exactly. So staying in the conversation to find out some more of the root causes. But I'll come to the A now, which is action. To your point, there's no point having the conversation. It actually doesn't lead to some form of change, because something isn't working. That's what you're finding out. Now, what can we do about it? And this is where patterns come in. So if you can slow down the conversation as well, you can start to observe what happens when one of you might become angry or sad or frightened, whatever it might be. But recognizing what it is in each other's part of the conversation that triggers something in the other. Then you can start to say, well, I recognize when you said ABC, that's when I started to get really worried. So could we rephrase that? Could we have an agreement between us that, you know, that phrase wouldn't be used? We can use a different phrase instead. So action comes out of a recognition of the patterns you have. And again, if I was in the room with a couple, I can see the patterns, but you can do the same yourselves. It's just a matter of being really vigilant for them.
Yes, I can imagine if emotions are high, then also trying to overlay this kind of structure. I can absolutely imagine how it needs somebody who is impartial and is there to oversee like the rules of the game and not able to dive in on the emotion.
Yes, exactly. Because what you're trying to do is just find your way of negotiating conflict and feelings in a way that feels safe. And if you can get that process embedded as habitual, whatever the issue of the future, you know you've got a mechanism to work it through.
Yes. And can I ask on the action point, how does one ensure that in the heat of the moment, and I don't mean in an argument, I mean if you are sitting down having one of these conversations and you've heard the person, you've empathized with how they're feeling and their situation, and then you don't commit to a set of actions that are just too ambitious, because fundamentally we are who we are. And if we still want a strong relationship with that person, there could be a tendency to say, I'll be whatever you want me to be, which just then ends up obviously untenable for the future. I'm sure if you are in the room with a couple, you are ensuring that those actions are achievable. But do you have any advice for people who might be doing it on their own?
Yes, absolutely. To put it in the context of where you intend to be going as you work through a relationship, and there are many different models, but effectively you're going through agreeing that you are also two separate people. Where you're heading for the good relationship is you end up as two individuals but with a relationship as well. That's really important. So the actions have got to preserve the individuals, you know, because we are two individuals in a relationship, but also recognize the extra value that you're in a relationship. So I think in terms of actions, it is also about being very tolerant and forgiving. So if we both know we are heading towards two, you could call them self-actualized individual within a relationship, then the actions have got to be congruent with who that person is. And I think that's why the empathy has to come first, because truly understanding what motivates your partner, what drives them, what makes them happy, etc., only comes through actually trying to really get to understand the person through that empathetic stage. But you're right, Jane, the actions have got to be reasonable as well, which it brings the R, because the R is about reviewing them. So we set out, we think we can have these actions. A couple, for example, might agree on sharing of childcare, something like that. They decide they're going to give each other an evening out with friends and one is going to bake, something like that. The review is, okay, let's just sit down together. I usually suggest a night where it could be a Sunday evening or something like that. You're not going to be lots of other competing factors. And just go through it as if you're a partnership, working out what happened the way you'd intended, what didn't, why that might be. Is there a substitute we could put in there? So it's just a nice back and forward. You don't want it to be heated. It's just a simple objective review of did it work it, and if not, what can we do to either replace it or change it in some way or give it another. So review is really important to make those actions actually achievable.
And I would imagine that on that review, both sides, I'm thinking of your model as through my own eyes, obviously, and it can be a kind of tendency to say, well, you know, this is what's been bothering me and I need to have change here and here's a list of actions. I mean, obviously you wouldn't be saying here's a list of actions you need to take to the other person. But I suppose with all of these, it needs to ensure that the conversation is flowing backwards and forwards, that both parties assume some responsibility for both the actions. It's not, well, you did this and it really annoys me when you do that, so I want you to change. It's ensuring that both parties take responsibility, which must be really hard.
Actually, when we're having those conversations in the room, I'm very clear that you don't talk about what you want the other person to do. You've got to speak about it from your own perspective. More, I feel this, I would like this, and almost ban the word you. And then I ensure that person gets enough time to be listened to. And it stops the defensiveness because it isn't all the you. You must change, you must be different. Because that will just naturally get the hackles up, the defensiveness. You know, you're quite right. That would certainly cause the conversation to come to an abrupt end often.
Yes, that's one way of putting it. And can I ask then, with regards to the actions, therefore, are the actions on the person who feels upset about whatever has happened? So, I mean, to your point, to your example, rather, around childcare, which I think is a very appropriate and relevant one for our audience, is it about saying, therefore, I am going to book a night out once a week or whatever it is, and I am going to need somebody else to do bedtime or whatever it is?
Yeah. So something I have noticed is that if you don't get into a sort of a tennis match of you this, you that, by staying in the I conversation, you will often get offered by your partner something that's going to help anyway. So it might be, you know, I feel exhausted. I feel like I'm not seeing my friends anymore. I could really do with a night out. You might just get offered that anyway by your partner. But if you don't, it could be, what I could do with is a night out, and I'd love to find a way to do that if we can. So again, inviting a solution, but I'm not demanding, I'm not attacking in any way.
Yes. And can I play devil's advocate a little bit? If the other person in the conversation doesn't respond or doesn't offer any support, where do you go with that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think I would be tempted to say, can I ask you for something? And if you were absolutely shut down, in the end, it might be, well, in the absence of that, I do need this night out. I'm going to look for somebody who could come in and just babysit for the evening. So hope that's okay, but this is a need I've got. So in the end, the only person in the relationship you have control over is yourself and your own actions. Does that help? A little bit.
Definitely, yes, yes. And I should say, actually, that wasn't any personal thing. My husband is actually very good at offering all of those things. But I can imagine it might be quite tough if you're having a conversation with someone who just kind of doesn't offer things up. But no, I love that idea that the only person who can solve this really is you. So I guess the T.
Yes, and this is about together, doing things together. Either way, it's a T. This one's a little controversial, actually, because you often hear with couples counselling or coaching the idea of you must have a date night.
I think I've probably even used it as well, because I feel like everyone else is having a date night, so we must.
Indeed. And I actually think it can be sort of contrary, really, to what you're trying to do, especially if things are a bit fractious at the time, because it builds up like it's a big thing. It's got to go right. Because, you know, it might be once a week, once a month, whatever frequency, but it puts a lot of pressure on the couple that it must go right. And I think it's about the little things. It's about the 5-minute things. It's about just saying, oh, come and watch this TV program with me, or there's a crossword. Can you help me with this clue? Or let me do the drying up for you. Whatever it is, I'm a big believer in the small but oft rather than the big date night.
Yes, I really love that idea, especially if you've just been in a situation like Christmas or holiday. That was often a huge stressful time. And then you come out and there's this feeling that we have to be the kind of hallmark couple. But yeah, just the smaller things, especially after years and years of living together or being in a partnership with that person. Just finding those little small moments rather than if a whole night out together doesn't feel quite right or if it's going to add more pressure and stress.
Yeah, because if it doesn't go right, it feels like a big deal if you've had a bad date night, whereas the odd little 5 minutes here and there, it's just far less pressurized.
And often I think, certainly in my relationship, things will feel more pressured when I'm under pressure somewhere else in my life. So if work is really heavy, then obviously at home, it manifests itself more in close relationships. So the idea of, all right, now we must go and sort everything out by going on a date night, when actually you really just want to sit and watch TV on your own. So then that adds further pressure to things, feeling you ought to be doing things. So yes, I really love the idea of just doing something together that is short and sweet. Yeah, whatever works.
Really small things, exactly. Little and often, that's the phrase. So that was my acronym HEART.
Brilliant. It's a really good way of remembering things. I'm certainly the hearing part.
I've worked with couples who've been together for decades in many cases and have not yet mastered this part of it. As I say, often for good reason. We might think it's great that we never argue. We're very quick to come to one of us apologizing or something like that, but it can stifle really getting to know the other person and actually getting to know you, because this conversation is also about being really authentic with your partner, disclosing what you really feel to them. So, yeah, I'm glad that resonated with
yes,
you.
Yes, it most definitely did. Well, thank you very much indeed. I've absolutely loved talking to you, and so many different angles that we could take as well. I can see that you would be very calm, Kathy, very calm. I think it would be a very good arbiter. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane.
I loved Kathy's HEART acronym, really easy to remember, and also providing a great framework when you're feeling quite emotional about things. I know I personally often have a tendency to just spill out whatever is going on in my head and not actually put some thought around how we can have a productive and constructive conversation. So huge thanks to Catherine. And you can find out more about everything that we offer, all of our coaches, including Kathy, on our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you again next time.